thanks to our sponsor, ShareGate. Does managing cloud spending keep you awake at night? Trying to figure out how your budget is being spent is enough to give anyone goosebumps. Our friends at ShareGate understand that most cloud architects and developers want to create great applications, not count dollars and cents. That's why they built ShareGate Overcast, to help admin control Azure costs through transparency, collaboration, and simplicity. With anomaly detection, AI-powered cost forecasting, as well as personalized cost recommendations in a unified Azure governance platform, you'll see results from the moment you connect Overcast to your tenant. To start a free trial of ShareGate Overcast so you can get back to building big ideas, visit sharegate.com/overcast_CS. This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 370. Today, AC and I are going to catch up about Inspire 2020, recorded live July the 31st, 2020. This episode is brought to you by Raygun. Raygun provides full-stack error, crash, and performance monitoring for tech teams. Whether you're a software engineer looking to diagnose and resolve issues with greater speed and accuracy, a product manager drowning in bug reports, or you're just concerned you're losing customers to poor quality online experiences, Raygun can provide you with the answers. Get full-stack error and performance monitoring in one place. The next time you're struggling to replicate errors and performance issues in your codebase, think Raygun. Head over to raygun.com and get up and running within minutes and dramatically improve the online experiences of your users. Back to the show. AC, welcome back.
Hey man, how's it going?
I say welcome back because you've actually been on a little trip this week and back at home now. Cut a little short, and we're recording this a day after we normally would, but good to have you back in the saddle. How are things?
I'm relaxed, man. It was good.
I'm so relaxed, man.
Yeah. A little bit of therapy, a little bit of family therapy. My kids are competitive swimmers. I know I've mentioned on the show, and they are in the middle of a two-week break for their club team that they swim on. Their club team's been really good about how they've been dealing with the pandemic and controlling when practices are. So it's been great. It's been a great outlet for my kids. They actually had one of the kids come down, test positive for it. And so it was nice to see how they reacted to it, how they handled it and stuff. So it was feel very comfortable with what they're doing. Any rate, nice. Kids were off for 2 weeks. While this whole pandemic, I mean, I work from home, but so to me, it's really not all that too much different other than my travel is, you know, slashed to nothing, which I'm enjoying. My poor kids and my wife, it's very different for them. And so they're kind of like, you can't really go out. It's not good in Florida, so you can't really go out really anywhere. It's not comfortable going anywhere right now. And I think my wife came to me about 2 weeks ago and she's like, we have nothing. We pulled our kids out of brick and mortar school and they're going to virtual school. The virtual schools are starting a little bit late because just the influx of so many people that have switched over to them in Florida. And so it took a little bit longer to go through like application process and stuff. So we're like, we've got nothing until late August. She's like, I'm going to go crazy if we can do nothing and these kids can do nothing and they're used to swimming.
Cabin fever.
Yeah. So we immediately were like, all right, you know what? Best therapy for us? Let's get on the beach. And closest place we could find to where we live, having access to a place on the water, was about an hour south, a little town called Palm Coast. And it was great, man. We had a fifth floor condo on the beach. We were there from a Sunday to Thursday, about midday. We were supposed to come home today. And we came home yesterday, but we were supposed to come home today. But I think we were all kind of, my wife could have definitely stayed another day. My son was like, I can take it or leave it. The last day we were there, my daughter got apparently, she did not do a good job of her sunscreen on her face. And it was pretty damn red on Wednesday night. Also the same day, our umbrella broke. And there was no wind on Thursday. And so I'm like, look, if I'm going to go down to the beach, I burn. So I usually wear a surf shirt and I usually sit under the umbrella most of the time and just enjoy being outside. I still wear sunscreen, but I had forgotten my hats. We bought a hat at the grocery store on Wednesday afternoon. But I was like, look, if I'm sitting outside in the sun all day on Thursday, I know I'm going to get burned, even what I normally do. And then there's also no shade for my daughter. And I was like, look, we can go back.
Just call it. Yeah.
So
yeah,
we called it. We came back.
Nice. A little getaway. That's good.
You know what was cool about it, though?
You got to watch a rocket.
I got to watch a rocket launch. I was closer to Cape Canaveral than I normally am. And yesterday, NASA and JPL launched Mars 2020 and the Perseverance rover on its way to Mars. And it went almost perfect, but the launch was just fine.
Yeah. It was pretty early Pacific time. I think it was like 4:50 in the morning, so I didn't watch it. I think that's right, 4:50, something like that.
Yep.
And so I didn't watch it live, but I watched the recording. And yeah, really stoked to see it get away off the pad all intact and not have a rudd on the way to orbit.
Yeah.
And actually, I don't know, did it ever go into orbit? Because it, or did it slingshot straight out and go, I don't know the profile of whether it went into Earth orbit first and then did its burn out to Mars.
I did a bunch of reading on this one, on the mission yesterday. This one's an interesting one. So yes, they did get no parking orbit. My understanding was, is they have already done the slingshot. They did a parking orbit going around once, and then they did the slingshot. And so they're on their way to, I think it's on their way to Mars right now.
I think that's the case. I watched some footage of when they were doing their second or third burn, and you just, the numbers on the screen had the apoapsis and periapsis, right? So you could see them, and suddenly they're burning, and one of them is just going nuts.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, the low end, right, which is the apogee, I forget which one's which now, off the top of my head. Yeah, God, that's terrible. Anyway, it was about 150 miles, I think, something like that. And that's when you do your burn if you want to get maximum effect for the to raise your orbit on the other side of the Earth, right?
Mm.
And so they started burning, and the number was just sort of creeping up, and it just starts getting faster and faster until they just dropped the numbers off the thing because the string of numbers just got so long, so fast. Okay, it's no longer useful, and they just got rid of it. And I imagine that was like, whoop, out to Mars.
Yeah. This one, they did have two problems when they launched. The launch went off without a hitch. People are asking, why in the world did you launch right now? This was interesting. A couple of fun facts about this mission. So why did they launch now in the middle of a pandemic? There was a big, like, kind of a crash thing where are we going to be able to launch this now?
Mars doesn't care.
Well, Mars doesn't care, but it was the whole, like, you know, are we going to be able to do this because everyone has to work from home? You can't work in the same place. Yeah. They go, we work in a clean room, but then we got to be really clean in the clean room. So one of the reasons they went ahead and launched this is because you can only go to Mars. You can go to Mars whenever you want, but if you don't go at a certain time, you need a really big rocket to go because the way that the lineup of both Earth and Mars. So they would have had to wait 21 months. So instead of it being Mars 2020, it would have been Mars 2022. And that was going to cost another $500 million just to store the rover to do that. And they're like, so it was cost effective to go ahead and push through and actually get this done now.
Gotcha.
Another couple of fun facts just about the launch itself. So the right about 10 minutes before the launch, there was an earthquake at JPL, a 3.8 earthquake.
I heard that.
Yeah, they cut over to him when they're doing...
not the earthquake. I heard they had it.
They cut over to him like going, yeah, so we just had an earthquake. So I'm going to go ahead and do the interview right now. We're trying to figure out if everything's okay. And everything was. They did have two issues when they went up. First, they were having trouble with communicating with the satellite, the probe. But it's not a problem. It's because it was too close to the Earth, and they.
Yeah, I heard that.
But it was because
its transmitter had overwhelmed, like the signal was too strong or something.
So it uses the Deep Space Network, the DSN, and it's the equivalent of if I walked up to you and I was screaming in your face from about a foot away, you'd have a hard time hearing me. But if I went 50 feet away and screamed, you could hear me because that's the way it was designed. That's what the volume was designed. They had the same problem. Deep Space Network isn't designed to listen to you really close up. So they had to change some stuff to make sure you could hear. And then there was a part two where it got a temperature thing or something. Yeah, it got too cold when the probe went in Mars shadow. And everybody's like, oh my God, are you serious? You didn't plan for that? And they go, it's not going to be in Earth's shadow once it gets to Mars, so we're okay.
Yeah, it went into like self-preservation mode or whatever you call it, like the safe shutdown.
Safe mode. They actually safe, had mode. Safe mode.
Yeah, gotcha. Safety on. Yeah. Looked pretty cool. Like I was, you know, looking at the rocket, it was a ULA rocket, but the fairing just looked gigantic.
Mm.
I don't know why it was so big because like the bit on the top that they actually popped off, like the payload, right, with the rover and the lander and the little mini helicopter thing in it, that looked actually relatively small. I don't know why the fairing was enormous.
There was a bunch of questions on Reddit about that too. They're like, why is the fairing so big? And because the payload doesn't look that big.
Well, maybe, so I did see one comment saying that the rocket really took off super fast because they used a a much larger rocket than really was required for a payload of that size in normal missions to like low Earth orbit, right? Mm. And so apparently, like, I watched the footage and you're like, yeah, it takes off off the pad and gets cracking pretty fast. Mm. And, you know, often you watch rockets and they sort of quite, you know, they lumber yep. off the pad for the first, you know, clearing the pad. You're wondering if the thing's going to make it, right? Mm-hmm. But this one was just like, whoop, and it's gone. Wow, it's actually really quick.
I can speak firsthand too, because if you go find me on Twitter at Andrew Connell and go look at a video I posted on July the 30th. I was able to stand on our patio at the condo and look south and see it go. And it
was booking it.
Oh my God. Yeah. It was really moving. It was surprising how fast it was going for where we were.
It only took 30 seconds for it to hit the sound barrier.
Yeah.
Break sound barrier. Sorry.
It is nuts.
Yeah.
This one is a cool mission though, because this one there were two things about this that are fairly unique about this. One is that it's got a little mini helicopter. It's got a little 4-pound helicopter that can fly, I think, like 25 feet off the ground or 15 feet off the ground. Mm. It's only designed to last for a certain amount of time. So it's only designed to last, I think, for like 60 days or something once it gets there. But the idea is to fly up and to be able to have more better perspective on some stuff. And it was apparently a last-minute add to the mission. And since it was only 4 pounds, I mean, it wasn't really that big of a deal. The other thing that's interesting about this one, this I hadn't realized this about Perseverance. So the idea is that this one is set up to where they can return samples back to Earth. Mm.
And so it's a little cache of samples, right?
Yeah. So it creates a little, they have this big thing that they kind of, this rover looks a lot like Curiosity, but it's got this big thing that it hangs off the front that can drill samples. It can do a quick little inspection of the sample and say that this might contain stuff that we want to send back and look and be able to analyze it for signs of life. Because the idea is this one's going to a certain crater that looked like it has got a very good chance of being a lake and a big riverbed that flowed into it billions of years ago. And if they're going to find stuff, this is a great place to find it. But the way it's designed is this mission doesn't have a way to get those things back. And so in 2026, they're launching something else that's going to go up. They're going to have, in partnership with the European Space Agency, they're going to have a probe, that satellite that's going to orbit Mars. It will be able to send something this almost it kind of looked like the design that they had, like a firework mortar cannon thing that had a bunch of little rockets on it. And it's able to land this back at Mars. And then the rover will be able to take the sample, put it in the rocket, and then it will be able to shoot this mini rocket up, deploy the payload, the satellite will capture it, and then NASA will send something back that will do the whole like Martian thing where we got Mark Watney back, and it'll send the payload back, capture it, and bring it back to Earth.
Gotcha.
It's freaking cool, man. This is so amazing.
Cool. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. that is pretty cool. Although, you know, I'm unhappy we have to wait over 10 years to get the samples back, but it'll be pretty sweet.
It will be. Well, maybe not 10 years. I mean, six years is when they're going to send the thing back.
I thought they said samples back on Earth in 2031.
Oh, they did? Oh, I didn't know that.
That's what I read somewhere. Maybe I'm not 100% sure if that was accurate, but that's what I read.
That sucks. We'll be in our 50s.
Yeah.
That's depressing as shit. Why don't we jump into the news?
Speaking of that, yeah. No, I'm only kidding. Yeah, let's do that. Let's take a quick break and get into the news.
This episode is sponsored by Nintex. If you could score an extra hour or two back in your day, would you take it? Because our friends over at Nintex want to give you a gift. The gift of time. Seriously, if you haven't checked out what Nintex has to offer lately, you definitely should. The platform built on Azure has evolved a lot. In just the past few months, the Nintex team has added new process mapping capabilities, and most recently, a new eSign capability called Nintex Sign, powered by Adobe Sign. Nintex also continues to revolutionize products you know and trust, including Nintex Workflow and Forms. With the power of Nintex, it is faster and easier for you to configure, not code, giving you valuable time back every day to sprint it however you want. Test drive the Nintex Process Cloud at nintex.com. And now, back to the show.
Okay, see, these last couple of weeks have been pretty busy with Microsoft ran its Ignite conference. There was a fair amount of stuff that came out at that. Not what I would call a bumper crop of interesting stuff this year. Kind of a different show because of being all virtual and things. So, you know, I didn't walk the floor this year. I didn't see interesting vendors. We didn't sit down with people and interview them at the time, stuff like that. So it's a bit of a different year for us, but we're going to get into some of that Inspire news coming up in a sec. But have you got anything you want to lead us off with before we get into that?
Yeah, sure. There's one thing that was, I guess there's two bits of news here. We talked a little bit about this last week about the changes in Microsoft 365 where they're shutting off 2010 workflows and pushing people to Power Automate. I've noticed as I manage the issue list for the SharePoint development repositories, SP Dev Docs in the SharePoint organization and GitHub. And every comment that's left in the SharePoint developer documentation is posted in that issue list. I've noticed a handful of people have been asking questions or you might say complaining that there are gaps in Power Automate from what you can do with workflows. And so if you are one of those people, I would suggest you go to those docs where it talks about how to address pain points with workflow and switching over to Power Automate, because there are some people who have started to call out gaps. And I think it might be a good time to voice your opinion on what's going on in case that, you know, things need to change, because Microsoft does look at that stuff. So that's one thing I would definitely look at. And I'll grab a link and put it in the show notes. The other one, though, is that Microsoft put out a bulletin from the Message Center in Microsoft 365. I've got a link to it. It's the Message Center ID of 219493. And all this one really says is that you should switch over to use MSAL. If you have custom apps, you should switch to MSAL and use the Microsoft Authentication Library. They are dropping support for the ADAL.js library effective June 30th, 2022. So that's about 2 years away. I remember seeing that be a lot earlier, but when I looked at the Message Center thing, it looked like they kind of changed the date a bit on this. So they're trying to get everybody to switch off of ADAL, which points to the V1 endpoint, and go to the V2 endpoint, which is using the Microsoft Authentication Library, which is the better endpoint to be used.
So does this mean they're going to actually deprecate the V1 endpoint? Because to me, this seems like pointless news, right? It's a library over a set of actual proper APIs.
Yep.
And so either they're deprecating the APIs, or they're just saying, we're not going to make any more improvements to this library.
I haven't seen them say that they're going to deprecate the V1 authentication endpoint. Only thing I've seen is, we're going to stop supporting our library that uses the V1 endpoint.
Yeah, well, this is bizarre to me that, like, ADAL is nothing. It's just a bit of fluff over the top of an authentication API.
It's an SDK.
Right? It's an SDK. I couldn't care less if they deprecate it.
Yep.
If I still want to use the V1 APIs, that's what I really care about.
Yep.
If they're going to say, we want you to get off this, saying you got to get off ADAL and go to MSAL seems really bizarre. Well, shouldn't they be saying we're deprecating V1 auth endpoints and you've got to move to V2?
That's what I would suspect they would do. It's like, we're not going to do anything with V1 endpoints anymore. Or at some point, you got to say, we're going to shut it off. I mean, they did it with TLS and say, we're not going to support TLS. Was it one? And now you have to do TLS 1.2. So
isn't that like saying we're changing from like red curtains to brown curtains when what they really mean is we're removing the window?
Yeah. It is a lot. Now,
I mean, maybe they're not removing the window.
To be fair, you and I are the mindset that, you know, you and I don't care for using these different authentication libraries that Microsoft provides. I think they make things more complicated. And I know they don't agree with this, but I think when you need to add all of this extra code to make this stuff work, I think it makes it more complicated. I find it to be easier just to work with the direct endpoints. And I know there's a lot of people that disagree with that, including Microsoft, but you and I are kind of in the same boat here on this. We're the same mindset. We'd rather work with the direct endpoints. So agree with you. This doesn't make a whole lot of sense. This doesn't really matter to me because it's like, I'm going to use the V2 endpoint unless it doesn't support something for V1. I'm going to use the V1 endpoint. But at any rate,
yeah.
The guidance, they just kind of said, here's what they're doing. And what that means is they will be doing no more tech support and no more security updates to ADAL effective July the 1st, 2022.
Gotcha.
So
interesting. Sticking on Microsoft 365 news before we dive into the Inspire stuff, I moved a couple of things up. News this week that apparently Microsoft announced that PepsiCo, that cool, refreshing drink, they announced a 5-year deal with Microsoft. Apparently, they're all moving to Microsoft 365 and Teams for like 270,000 employees of PepsiCo.
That's a few people.
That's a couple of, that's a couple of mailboxes to deal with.
That's a bunch of B5s.
Yeah, exactly.
Somebody's happy.
Well, who knows? I don't know. Yeah, they don't talk much about the SKU mix, but obviously this is a big win for Microsoft. It's kind of funny because I sort of think of Microsoft 365 has kind of won the war and they don't really need to put news out like this anymore because they've kind of got, at least at the large enterprise end of town, there's kind of no other choice, right? Honestly, like really, there's not really much of a choice. And so it sort of surprised me they're still putting out this news, but hey, quarter of a million employees is still a decent deal that was done. And it still shows that there's room out there for them to expand, that they're not completely saturated, I suppose.
Yeah.
So some good news for Microsoft.
Yeah.
Another one we got here that I found that I thought was interesting. So you know how Microsoft had that data center they submerged?
Yes.
Or that sort of that container that they built, like a submarine data center type thing?
Mm-hmm.
It sat on the bottom, not cruised around the world. But in a similar vein, apart from the water part, Microsoft are testing using hydrogen fuel cells for its Azure data centers by 2030. So apparently, you know how Satya has said, Microsoft will be carbon positive by 2030, I think it was, something like that.
Wait, negative.
I can't remember the date.
Is it?
Carbon negative. Yeah.
Yeah.
They will reduce more carbon than they use.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I'm confused.
They'll be on the good side.
Yeah.
They'll be on the good side by 2030. I imagine this is part of it, but it's replacing diesel. And I imagine this is for things like the backup generators, right? Power consistency and all that sort of stuff. So they won't have to have... I don't know if you've ever visited one of these data centers. Have you ever been to one of them?
I would love to.
They've got these, diesel generators that are like the size of double-length semi-trucks. I mean, they're humongous, right? And that's what they're talking about replacing, I believe, right, is they'll use the hydrogen fuel cells to do that instead. Pretty sweet. But good to see them sort of taking the initiative and playing around with the stuff now that they're serious about it. So I just thought that was kind of interesting.
Very cool.
Yeah.
This podcast is brought to you by AvePoint. If you like The Cloud Show, you will love the Shift Happens podcast with Microsoft MVP and regional director Dux Raymond Tsai. Each week, Dux talks with one of the industry's brightest stars about their most challenging modern workplace or digital transformation projects. He uncovers the players, organizational hurdles, and last-minute surprises that inevitably arise when ambitious people try to impact their workplace. Season 1 features FedEx, Wells Fargo, Heathrow Airport, United Airlines, and other industry leaders. Go to www.avpoint.com/blog/shifthappens or search for the hashtag Shift Happens. That's one word, hashtag Shift Happens, wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe today. And we're back.
All right, AC. Microsoft Inspire 2020, kind of the first big pandemic show. The first big one, right? I guess.
Well, Build.
Yeah, I guess so. But Build, what? Yeah, I don't know. Build, I guess I don't say big, right? Build historically has not been that big, right?
Oh, I see. Yeah, I see what you mean.
Inspire is usually 4 or 5 times the size of Build.
That's true.
I guess that's when it's an in-person thing. So, hey, all bets are off, right?
Yeah.
So, yes. No, you're right. But yeah, Microsoft Inspire, it's the partner conference. For those of us oldies, it's WPC rebranded, designed for Microsoft partners and so forth to go and hear from Microsoft about the year ahead.
It's an interesting conference name because Inspire is designed to inspire people, to inspire their customers, inspire their partners. But you're right. I mean, it very much is the partner conference. And this isn't a knock on it, but I mean, I'm a developer at heart. And there really wasn't anything in here that was like, that's inspiring.
Yeah.
There really wasn't anything that really made me jump out. There was one big bit of news that we touched on last week that I've done a little bit of reading, a little bit of research into to try and understand it a little bit more. I may be a little more confused now than I was before.
I love it when that happens. Always good.
It's around something that they announced called Microsoft DataFlex, which is supposed to be the replacement for the Common Data Service, which is a Power Platform thing. Part of my research, I listened to another podcast, the Microsoft IT Pro Cloud podcast, and they joked around, we joke around with Microsoft naming things. And you would have thought that if it was going to be, the common data service is really only used by Power Platform things, right? So if it's going to be, they're going to rename this thing and it's going to be called DataFlex, would have been kind of cool if it was like PowerFlex. But
yeah.
Anyway, I give them credit for that one. That wasn't me. But
they want to get data in there somewhere, I guess.
Or Power Data or some, I don't know. But anyway, so what they did is the Microsoft marketing and licensing people, basically the collection of people at Microsoft that have dartboards, they came up with a new name where they said, sorry.
Dartboards or shotguns where they just spray stuff at a wall. Yeah.
So what they've done, the common data service was a way for you to do like relational data and be a low code way to have data structures and be able to and work with data inside things like Power Apps. But one of the challenges of using it, which common data service was required for things like the chatbot that you could create and use inside Microsoft Teams. Well, the challenge that they had with that was that in order to be able to create chatbots for Microsoft Teams and be able to enable power users to be able to create those, they had to have the common data service, which was expensive. And it was another thing you had to jump into. So it really wasn't much of an option to say, try this out, see if you like it. It was more that buy this thing, then try it out and see if you like it. So what they did is they've introduced a new thing called Microsoft DataFlex and DataFlex Pro. So what DataFlex Pro is, and this is the part where things get a little confusing. So DataFlex Pro is what CDS was. It's just CDS has just been renamed to DataFlex Pro. But then they've also created this thing called DataFlex, which in their marketing says it's built on top of CDS. So is DataFlex built on top of DataFlex Pro, which is weird. But what they've done is that DataFlex is available inside of things that you can create with Microsoft Teams, and it's part of your existing license. Now, which license? That's not clear. It looks like it's going to be available inside of all the e-licenses, the enterprise licenses in Microsoft 365.
Yep.
That wasn't clear because it did say select people, select partners, or select customers will have access to it inside of your Microsoft 365 licenses. I don't know if that means you're going to get access to it as part of the rollout, or if it means that if you have a certain license, you'll get access to it. That part's unclear. But the idea is that DataFlex, not the pro version, but DataFlex is intended to be the low-code data platform for Microsoft Teams. So it's going to give you the ability to do relational storage, rich data types. It is the solution to when you needed or wanted to use the common data service inside of Microsoft Teams. So if you want to do a chatbot in Teams, you can use Microsoft DataFlex. You don't need to pay for DataFlex Pro or CDS anymore. You can also use this inside of Power Apps that you have created inside of Teams and that are rendered inside of Teams. Think of this as kind of like what you used to be able to do with CDS inside Teams, but now you can do it without having to pay for anything as long as you stay in Teams. If you want to be able to leverage what we used to know as CDS and you want to be able to, and now is DataFlex Pro, if you want to be able to do those things inside of Power Apps and you wanted to be able to render those outside of Teams, like on mobile or on as mobile apps or in the web, or if you want to be able to leverage other parts of the Power Platform that can leverage DataFlex, that's where you need to pay for a pro license. And that's the new thing that they've kind of, it's weird. Pro isn't like, they didn't introduce pro to being like this new thing. It's more like they just took what they already had, said, okay, that's now pro, but if you want to do it just in Teams, we're going to give you this light version that doesn't have the word pro in it.
Yeah, it's just a skewing and pricing tier thing by the sounds of it. So it's like DataFlex, you can use it in Teams. It doesn't cost you extra. And it's sort of, that's the SKU that you buy, right? You're not actually paying anything for it, but that's the license you get effectively, right? Whereas Pro sounds like same deal, but outside.
Yeah,
right?
Outside of Teams, you can do this. I wonder if this has
It's kind of like, the way I think about it is like, you know, with Azure AD, you kind of get, you know, you've got free Azure AD and you've got premium Azure AD. And premium Azure AD costs you, and the free one's free. But if you've got Office 365, you've sort of got an Azure AD premium license. You've got a few things out of premium that you get in your Office 365 version of it for free. Does that make sense?
Maybe
I'm confusing you more.
No.
But you know what I mean?
That does make sense.
It's more of a packaging thing that and a licensing thing than anything else.
So
nice. So are you going to play around with this? Have you played around with it yet at all, or have you done anything with Power Apps and Teams yet?
I
want to know more about it, but I don't find myself with a use case.
Okay, so that's kind of where I am, and I'm going to say this, and I don't want to put across the impression that I'm dismissing what they've done, but Power Apps is not made for me.
Yeah,
and I don't like it because I don't like those WYSIWYG kind of building an app thing like that. It kind of irritates me more that I don't have a way to do like testing and a real deployment from like a dev to QA to prod and everything. And that's just the dev side of me. It's just not for me as a use case.
You mean you can't put it in GitHub?
No, exactly. That is what I mean. I'm going to say this.
What happens when somebody breaks it?
Exactly. So here's, I'm going to be very blunt, but again, back to my disclaimer. I don't really care about this, but I'm not saying that it's not useful for it. Like one of my customers of my class came to me and said, now that I've invested all this stuff in SharePoint framework, now they've announced Dataflex, did I just waste all my time and I can do this? I'm like, no, hold on. If someone came to me and said, I want to build this app, and I'm like, you can do that yourself. Just use Power Apps. And you have the license that you need to go through and to build some app and maybe a mobile app and that kind of stuff. And you can go pretty far with that. And like, oh, sweet. So I don't have to come to you for this. I'm like, no, simple app. You're just going to do list kind of management and have it, relational data and stuff. Yeah. Oh, cool. Yeah. I don't need you. I'm like, sweet. I don't want to build that kind of thing anyway. But if you need something more complicated, that's more of a mission critical app or something that's going to be, that needs to have a much more structured deployment cycle and testing and more like rigor around it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then yes, that's where the more dev tools and it's always been that way. If you want to be able to, if you can build your app as an access app, by all means, go for it. If you want to, you don't need to call me to do that stuff. Right. And that's kind of where the model is. This is just it's not a tech that I am interested in diving into. So no, am I interested? Am I curious for it? Yeah. I'd like to sit over Laura Rogers' shoulder and watch her build one of these and just see how do you go about doing it. But am I interested in doing it? No.
Yeah. I guess it's like thinking of building a house analogy, right?
Yeah.
Sure. You could build a house of shipping containers that are preset. You look at them and you can pick the length, right? But that's about it. You might be able to pick the color. You might be able to pick some of the features, like whether it's refrigerated or not, whether the doors lock or whether it's watertight or whatnot. But so there's a set number of different types of shipping containers you can pick, and you could build a house out of that. You could stack them all on top of each other and, go to town. But if you want to build a custom house, you got to design it and build it yourself, right?
That's just more I'm thinking of it. So don't take this as me like poo-pooing their features.
I sort of feel like I need to give it a shot and build some stuff myself so that then I can like respectfully poo-poo it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to you doing that on my behalf.
I say it sort of tongue-in-cheek because it's actually probably pretty good at what it does, but I feel bad about not knowing more about it. So I want to give it a shot.
I gave up on that. When we went to this whole cloud thing and we were seeing updates to products happening so quickly and so much more frequently.
You just can't keep up.
Well, it's not even can't keep up. It's like, I find it, it's like trying to find the unicorn, right? Or a unicorn elephant. Like, I can keep trying to find it, but I just don't feel like it's a worthwhile interest of my time. I don't try to know everything. I try to keep a niche that I'm very deep at and that it interests me.
Yeah.
If I need something like this done, I'll learn it on demand or I'll go find somebody that already knows it. And if I need to, I'll pay them to do it.
Exactly. There's plenty of people actually, and especially in our community, that are sort of flipping from SharePoint experts to Power Apps experts.
Mm-hmm.
Plenty.
And that's, There's nothing wrong with that. And if that's what they're interested in, by all means, go for it. I mean, that's to each your own, right?
Yeah.
So,
I guess it's sort of similar to what people used to do with SharePoint Designer in some ways.
Power Apps to me is like the new version of Access.
Oh, exactly. Right? 100%.
The new version of Notes. And that's great. You want to be able to
do that? There's a spot for that. Yeah.
There's a spot for that. Great. That's not the job that I want. And that's fine. It's fine.
You know, what's interesting about that segment? This is what the audience, I mean, this is one of the things that Microsoft have struggled with for a really long time is connecting with people that sit in that audience, right? Because they're not clearly labeled, right? If you go to a conference, it's really easy to find developers because you say, who are the developers? Everybody will stick their hand up. And, or you'll say, like, who works on the business side of your companies, right? Like business analysts or whatnot, everybody will stick their hand up, business. It's really hard to pick a term or a name for the people that would build power apps, right?
Mm-hmm.
Could call them citizen developers, like we talked to Mike Fitz about, right? But would somebody from a normal company, a regular company, go and stick their hand up saying, I'm a citizen developer? Probably not. They might not even know what that means. And the people that use them or sit in that audience typically are spread across the business. There's no one role that they sit in. And so it's really hard to define it and connect with them, right? We struggled with this a decade ago when I was on the SharePoint team with SharePoint Designer. There was no tag name for that audience that used SharePoint Designer. So it's really hard to connect to them and market to them or talk to them and communicate or build a community around things like that. It's interesting. But, you know, Power Apps is obviously picking up a bunch of steam, so good on them.
What else
That's CDS, I guess. There's a bunch of Office 365 news, Microsoft 365 news that I thought we could just sort of quickly pick through. We'll just sort of blaze through in quick succession. Building apps and chatbots and visualizing data without leaving Teams. So looks like you can launch Power Apps from within Teams now, so you don't even have to. I would summarize this news of, this is the tongue-in-cheek summary is, how much stuff can we jam into Teams? Right? So the first one is building apps and chatbots from inside Teams. The second one is jamming Power BI into Teams.
And the third one, well, that's the Dataflex announcement.
Yeah, that's true. Exactly, yeah. The Power BI one is interesting because from the screenshot, it looks just like Power BI except with the top bar of the waffle and it's in Teams. And so now there's like two left-hand launch bars and stuff. It really doesn't look particularly well thought out in my view, my mind. But this is the gold rush, right? Everybody's trying to jump on the Teams bandwagon and be part of it. And so that doesn't surprise me.
They had some news about the Microsoft Lists app.
Yes.
Now, we're recording this on the last day of July, so this is a bit not timely, but the Lists app is supposed to be rolling out to Microsoft 365 in July and available in Teams by mid-August. So right now, you should see the Lists app in your M365 tenant, and you'll get it in Teams by mid-August.
Mid-August. Okay, interesting. Yeah, I want to play around with this. They look like sort of... Why are you laughing?
So this is one that I'm sorry, I forgot that I was going to mention this one. This is one that this is from the Department of Tone Deaf. So they have there's a new solution from Microsoft 365. Best for me to, let me just go ahead and read what the description of the service is, and then I'll give you my commentary. Quote, commercial and educational customers moving to the cloud in Microsoft 365 have long needed a simple print experience for their employees. Universal Print is a Microsoft SaaS solution that enables intuitive, rich, and secure print experiences for users. And da, 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 da. This new service announced in the spring opens opportunities to many reseller partners. It allows you basically to print from anywhere to a printer in your organization. From the Department of Tone Deaf, I'd like to add, while we're all working from home and the printer is right next to you.
Yeah, that's right. Just for the record, it freaks me out that I've printed to a wrong printer.
Successfully. That's the scary part.
Right. So yeah, A, can you actually print to start with? That's yeah. But then what's the scenario they're targeting where you want to be somewhere else and print to a printer somewhere else? What's the scenario? Like, I get that there might be some situations, right, where you want to, I don't know, print something maybe on the printer in a Starbucks shop and you're just visiting, perhaps?
Yeah.
And you're not connected to it, or maybe you're at Starbucks headquarters and you want to print the shift schedules. But it seems like a little bit going backwards too. Like, surely that should all be digitized now. But you know what I mean?
How many people are going to go back when this pandemic is all over? We're going to go back to school and back to the offices, and you're going to have all these printers that are out of paper with all these print jobs that are just spooled all over the floor. And
I had a pretty awkward incident once at Microsoft where I printed a fairly sensitive document on a printer in another building. Ooh. By accident, and had to basically get up from my desk and run to the other, not quite across campus, but you know, it was a few buildings over.
Oops.
And had to go get it. Yeah. So it was a little awkward. Fortunately, it was just sitting there and kind of curious. But yeah, I'm sure people have had these mishaps before of printing the wrong stuff to the wrong place. And this just seems like, wow, that's cool. Now I can print it to the other side of the world. Brilliant.
Yeah.
There must be a scenario that they've built for this. And I suspect it's got nothing to do with normal sort of corporate scenarios. It's probably something like students visiting a library and being able to print or a coffee shop or something like that.
Mm.
I don't really know. There was one out of here that was kind of interesting. Did you see this one? Enabling first-line workers to communicate safely and efficiently. They've now got this thing called Teams walkie-talkie,
mm-hmm.
where you can, if you have an Android phone, you can like do push-to-talk, and it'll use Teams to make that communication happen. Didn't we already have push-to-talk on, like, people have walkie-talkies for frontline workers? And like, what's the, I wonder what the scenario is of like needing to use Teams to do push-to-talk. One communication solution, I guess.
I haven't understood this, and it's not in a critical way, but I just haven't understood it yet. I'd like to see, how do I say this? God, this is, again, every time this kind of stuff comes up, I feel like I'm always like being the negative guy about Teams. It just feels like something that is trying to be jammed. Another thing like the Teams Gold Rush. Another thing that's another experience is trying to be jammed into Teams. I understand that it's not. And so I just don't understand. I see the scenarios they talk about, like there's somebody with a hard hat and then they have a picture of the hard hat's got like a...
Yeah, like a camera and a mic on it.
Yeah, a camera and a mic on it and stuff. So you can see someone that's working. I'm like, is that person really going to be connected on Teams and they're going to be showing what they can see instead? Maybe. I don't know. How many organizations are actually doing that? I would suspect that there's organizations that are doing it because you wouldn't just build it if no one doesn't need it. So I don't know. I don't understand it.
Yeah, I've never been in it. I've never worked in an industry that would be where they'd find that useful. So it's hard for me to know.
That's same. Yeah, same experience.
One that was really stuck out to me because of my history with data about people and profiles from Hyperfish was, now in 365, you can extend people cards. So you know the contact cards that pop up in 365, or the people pane that flies out when you click on somebody and stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Now you can extend those cards with additional data. So it used to be, they used to be just very static. You used to have, you know, the data that you could see from Azure AD, and that was pretty much unchangeable. Now you can go in. Unfortunately, you need to use some PowerShell to set this up, but now you can go and add additional attributes to those people cards.
Mm.
You could add some extension attributes, for example. Maybe you are capturing, I don't know, t-shirt size or shoe size or I don't know what, driver's license number.
Mm-hmm.
And you wanted to put that on people cards or, I don't know, license number of something. You could capture that in Azure AD and in an extension attribute and go and drop it in your people cards now, which is kind of cool.
That is cool.
It seems like a really small thing, but it's taken, you know, people data in 365, as you know, is pretty hairy because there's lots of different places for it and there's lots of different stores and there's a team working on this that are trying to bring things together in a bit more reasonable manner, and that the other one's working on this as well, which it's been really nice to see. It's been a very long time coming, but are slowly making progress. There's some new profile APIs to boot to go along with it, which is nice.
Yeah, I think we mentioned something about that with a couple. Like one or two shows ago, but yeah, you can be able to get access to your profile data inside of Microsoft Graph. That also ties. I remember seeing another Message Center announcement that Microsoft said that if you want to do anything with profiles, that you should start switching all of your applications to start using Microsoft Graph to interact with users, because they're going to stop doing any kind of improvements to the Microsoft Azure AD Graph, which is the REST API for Azure AD. That the Microsoft Graph proxies. So
yes,
those names got a little confusing. But
and then to boot, you've got the profile store in SharePoint, which is ancient and painful.
Mm-hmm.
And that's slowly going away as well. They haven't made any announcements about that, but there's a new set of profile APIs in Microsoft Graph that are starting to chip away at the need for that.
Mm-hmm.
So they're trying to get down to one place to go for profile data, which cannot come soon enough.
You might as well have multiple places. We got tons of places to do tasks, so.
Yeah. More the merrier, eh?
Yeah.
Painful. Anyway, so that's a bit of a roundup of Microsoft 365 news. We'll link off to, in the show notes, to the Inspire book of news, right? You've got a link here.
Mm-hmm.
Microsoft put out they started doing this for press. Like, we started getting invited to the book of news before events a while back, but it's great to see them actually publish this now.
Yeah.
Where it's one place to go for a big summary of everything from Microsoft with their, for a particular event they call the Book of News, which I think is pretty nice place to go read summary.
It's great for a podcaster, but it's great. It's great that they do this because, I mean, with these events, there's so much stuff that comes out of these conferences and so many announcements. Maybe not Inspire this year, but there's so much announcements that come out of these things. It is so hard to stay on top of everything. And you find out like a month later, oh, we announced that at Ignite. Like, where was that? I don't remember seeing that. Yeah. And it's, you know, I'm dialed in. I try and follow what's going on. And I look for this stuff. And the fact that, you know, when you have to look for it and you still can't find it. So it's nice to be able to say, you know, how do I get my stuff added to it? It started off, like you said, with Ignite. It started off with Azure at Ignite. Microsoft 365 did much better at last year's Ignite. And, you know, we got Ignite coming up again in September, I think it is, of this year. It's another online event. You know, they have another opportunity to do that. We'll see the kind of progress they make there as well.
Cool. Shall we take a quick break and get stuck into some picks?
Sounds good to me. AC's Voitanos delivers on-demand video-based training for developers on the latest SharePoint extensibility model from Microsoft in his course, Mastering the SharePoint Framework. Back to the show.
All right, AC. I always look forward to your picks. What do you got for us this week?
Let me go first. All right. So I've got one that's a quick one. GitHub has posted a roadmap, a public roadmap. You got a project, they got issues on there, and you can see here's what they're working on and here's what's coming. I've had the opportunity to see what the direction that they're going. GitHub definitely feels like they're making more of an enterprise push. It really looks like what you know as Azure DevOps boards, the planning stuff that they have, the project planning stuff, the documentation, all of that stuff is moving to GitHub Enterprise. So making GitHub Enterprise more of a much more appealing option. But I really like the ability of how, I really like the fact that you've got GitHub is like, for most people is great for like the basic stuff or for what most projects need. But if you are an enterprise, you want to have a lot more process around what you're doing, you have the ability to do that if you want to level up. Anyway, their roadmap is public. That's my quick pick this week. I have another pick though. That I was going to, this was a last minute ad / switch out. So I started watching a new Netflix show last night with my family. This is one that I'm not the only one doing it because it's like it was number 3 on the Netflix trending for like a week or two. And the wife's had it on there. And the fact that when I saw the title of it, I was like, oh my God, okay, whatever. I dismissed it, but I've watched 2 episodes of it and it's really good. The show is called Down to Earth with Zac Efron. And what's neat about it is that each episode the idea is that he and this other guy that he listened to this podcast, this guy that was all about sustainable living and sustainable living, like, and not destroying the earth for, and both for you health-wise, but also for environmentally more friendly.
Yeah.
And he got to be friends with him. I think his name's Dennis. Zac Efron got to be friends with them, and they've now gone around. They're starting to do this. They're doing this series on Netflix where they go to different locations and they look at specific places and how things have changed. So the first 2 episodes that I've watched, one was about France, one was about Iceland. The Iceland one was fascinating. So I didn't realize that Iceland was 100% on coal and natural gas, I think it was, or oil in the 70s. Today, they're 100% on renewable energy. They don't use any coal. They don't use any of that. And they go into some detail about some of the stuff that they've done and how they've done it. And they show the hydro plants. They show the geothermal plants and how they're actually doing it. But then like what the byproducts are and how they showed how they take the carbon dioxide that comes out of the earth that they use, that's part of that generates the steam that turns the turbines that generates the electricity. They also use some of the hot water that comes out. They pump it in their roads so they don't have to shovel their roads or salt their roads. They're just constantly melted during the summer or during the winter.
During the winter?
They show,
wow, that's clever.
Yeah, they show how they take the carbon dioxide and they pump it back into, they dilute it in water and they pump it back into the earth. And it bonds to the rock and creates a solid form, crystallized form of carbon dioxide. So it doesn't go back in the atmosphere. It's a hard thing that goes back in the earth.
How fascinating.
It really is. It was a really, I found a lot of it really interesting. Then there was the France one was a little, it started to lose me on the France one because I started talking about water and it started with a sit down with a water sommelier. Shocker. Gotcha. The water sommelier was in France. Oh, sorry, was in Los Angeles. But it showed like, and he talked about different kinds of water and this water feels more like hard, right? And this water has more flavor to it. And I'm looking at some of the stuff they're talking about water and I'm like, wow. So as I'm sitting here drinking my beer, I'm watching something about water bullshit. But it actually is pretty good.
I went to a restaurant once with my wife in Italy and it was, I think, a 3 Michelin star restaurant. And it had a water menu.
That's what.
And it wasn't like, it wasn't like a one pager. It was like a 20 pager.
Yeah.
Of water. And I was just looking through this thing going, I'm going to need a recommendation.
Yeah. I felt a bit like that. As you're looking at it, it was kind of like, this is a water sommelier. And I'm like, oh my God. Okay. I'm going to entertain you and I'm going to keep watching it. But it was interesting. And I recognize different kinds of water. And I think, you know, I don't know if I think of
things
water.
Things taste different.
Yeah.
There's hard and soft water. And yeah.
He talked about like the total dissolved solids and here's how this water is different from that water. And you can't get this water anywhere else except for Slovenia. And I was like, okay. But then the part that went into France, there was a part where it talked about, this was interesting. And I wish they would have gone deeper in this, but you know how they have like, medical miracles, and they say, is this a like a religious miracle? And was this person really healed that way? And it went to a place in Lourdes, France, and it showed how they document and how they prove out that this was a true miracle, like in the sense of like a religious miracle healing type thing.
Yeah.
It was interesting. And I would have liked for them to go a little bit deeper in that and to talk a little bit more about it.
How do you prove something's miraculous?
There's 7 things, or I think it's 7 things, but it's, there is a, so I'm going to get these wrong, but here's the gist of it. This is what made me a little bit more believable. It has to be a scientifically diagnosed thing. So you've got lung cancer.
Yep.
It has to have something must have happened, like a blessing. Let's just call it a blessing. Something must have happened. Your issue must have disappeared immediately. It must have scientifically and medically not been able to be proven by medical doctors that it was that with a medical reason. And it has to have stayed gone for a certain duration. And it's something like 2 or 3 years. So the one that they show you is one of a guy who had this huge cancer like in his hip in 2016, I think it was, or 17. He bathed in a certain holy bath and all these doctors came back and they go, we have no medical reason why his cancer's just disappeared. And the ball.
It's the water. It's the special water. It's the water off the menu in the restaurant. Like it's that $25 bottle of water.
Same episode, man.
Exactly. That's right.
There's a part of this that kind of, I looked at him like going, okay, you got me through the water bullshit. Now you're trying to get me through the medical, you know, healing stuff as well. And I'm like, okay, you know what? Teach
their own. It's good to watch that stuff and see how people think about stuff. Yeah.
Watch it. I found it interesting. I'm not going to say I'm completely sold on it, but the way that they go about doing it and say that, you know, here's how we define a medical miracle. I was like, okay, that's believable. That's believable.
Well, at least they have a documented set of steps.
Yeah, it was good. Well, he was kind of funny at the very end of the whole explanation. He's got like this file and it's like maybe 9 inches thick. And he goes, if you want to measure it, here's the medical stuff. Here's the religious piece to it. And the religious piece was like maybe like 5 or 6 pieces of paper. And then all the medical stuff to document that it was actually a medical miracle or religious miracle was like much bigger. He goes, so in weight, there's a lot more weight here. I'm like, okay. All right. So it's
interesting.
It's not a bunch of like, you know, hand wavy stuff, but
nice.
I'm going to stay away from that.
I'll watch the Netflix.
I'm going to back away from the religious debate as fast as I can now. CJ, how about your picks? What?
Boop, boop, boop.
What you got for us this week?
Something completely different, although definitely not a miracle. Apollo 11 spacecraft joysticks top out at $780,000 at an auction, despite NASA concerns. Turns out that many years ago, somebody from Northrop Grumman, I believe, who was possibly, well, yeah, actually now I'm not 100% sure about that. They took the joysticks out of the command module and stored them. And the story goes that they were going to be thrown out. And this guy said, can I keep them? And this boss was like, yeah, sure. So he took them home. Anyway, they've now been sold. So they've got three joysticks, right? There's two joysticks and a translation controller, you know, like the thing that looks like a T.
Yeah.
Right? The sort of the stick that looks like a T as opposed to a regular joystick. They got sold at auction. They fetched $780,000 from the Apollo 11 mission from the Columbia command module. Yeah. Pretty sweet, huh? Needless to say, the joystick that Neil Armstrong had fetched the most. Being the commander. Yeah. Pretty curious though, eh? Like, it's fascinating. Like, NASA wanted these things back, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And or said that didn't want them back. They said they should go to a museum. They shouldn't be sold to private collectors, I think. Basically, I don't think they can prove that they should not have been given away initially, something like that, or that maybe they were given away like in a documented way that was correct, and so they've got no recourse to get them back. But apparently there was this guy who found them in a safe or something, and all the stuff was going to get thrown out, and his boss was like, okay, you can have them, and so he took them before he retired, and now he's sold them for almost $1 million.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, interesting, huh? Mm-hmm. I want to buy stuff like this one day.
Yeah.
I just want a room full of really interesting shit, you know? I just want a room, not my office, just a little room of curiosities.
Yeah.
Of just random stuff like that.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome.
Family guest comes over for dinner, like going, you want to see some cool shit? Like, yeah, come into my room. Let me show you some stuff.
Yeah. And not like weird animal heads and stuff on the wall. Just like there's one thing I really want in particular, which is it's a block of, I think it's uranium from the original German tests at trying to build nukes
during
World War II. Yeah. There's a bunch of these blocks that are out and around. Some are in private hands. And these tiny little, sort of like the size of dice. Maybe a large version of a dice, right? And of a six-sided dice. There are quite a few of them, like 50 or 100 of them around or something like that. And they were on these strings and being dangled into a hole where they were trying to make nuclear reactions happen. And then the end of the war came around. It was all scuttled and all these blocks were buried and all this. Anyway, some of them are now in private hands. That's one of my... I want a block of radioactive shit. Pardon my French.
No, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Okay,
I go on. The Gimli glider is my second pick. If you haven't heard this story, it will blow your mind. It is the story of Air Canada Flight 143, which was a 767, a four-month-old 767, flying in Canada from one side of the country to the other, I believe. Anyway, it ran out of fuel, and from 40,000 feet or something like that, 41,000 feet, it was basically a glider. And it's a really interesting story on how it ran out of fuel. Basically, it's a metric conversion problem. That's one part of the story. And the second part of the story is where it landed. So they were in pretty deep poo, so to speak, right? They'd run, both engines were not running. They were a glider in a 767. They couldn't make the airport that they wanted to divert to. They found a smaller airport that was closer by, that was on a map, that they said they were going to land. Turns out that airport had been converted into a drag strip, right? And there were people racing on the drag strip when a totally silent 767 fell out of the sky and landed on the drag strip. And nobody died.
Oh my God, I love this quote. He's right when they realize it. This is awesome. He's like, they come to find out. He's like, something's wrong with the fuel pump. They're going through looking at some stuff. And the pilot goes, you know, I would not take this air. And he stopped. And all of a sudden there's a bunch of four beeps. And he's like, oh, F-bomb. We got to go to Winnipeg.
Yeah. Yeah. So it turns out they didn't make Winnipeg, but they landed at a field close by called Gimli, right? Which is why it's called the Gimli glider. Which is not very far from Winnipeg, but needless to say, a little too far where you don't have any fuel. And so they just landed on this drag strip with people racing and basically parked it came in with all these day campers and like people camping out at the drag strip, and this thing just came out of the sky. I mean, it would be eerily silent as well, right? Like you can't, you just see a plane coming around, you can't hear anything, and it came down and landed on this old runway. So yeah, its front gear didn't lock, and so it basically came down on its rear wheels and then its nose hit the ground. Anyway, they fixed it up and flew it out of there, and apparently it's still flying. Or no, sorry, no longer flying. At the time of when this article was first written, as of January 2008, it's no longer flying. So it's a while ago now, but yeah, pretty crazy, huh?
I can't wait to read this. I started reading it when you were doing your last pick, and my jaw just hit the ground. This is yeah. So cool.
This sent me on a whole Wikipedia-like bender, and I started reading about A-10, you know, the Warthog.
Mm-hmm.
I started reading about planes that have landed without their gear and what happens, and it turns out the A-10 is pretty good at it.
Really?
Yeah, and they're like, oh, yeah, we get them landing without gear all the time due to hydraulic issues, all that sort of stuff. A couple of days, they're flying again. Like, wow, those things are built like tanks. It's incredible.
The plane that's only known as the rat.
Yeah, the because it's mowing milk bottle sized bullets at you. Yeah. But like the engines are way back up, right? Mm. So they're nowhere near the ground. So debris doesn't fly into them. There's all sorts of interesting design things that they've done with them. But anyway, the Gimli glider is worth a read.
That's cool. Good find, man.
All right, AC. Good to talk to you. We will speak again next week. Stay safe. And we will reconvene after you've read the Gimli glider story.
Oh, absolutely. I'm gonna have lunch and take my iPad with me and go read this while I'm eating. This is awesome.
I can just imagine. There's people in those cars turn around and they're looking and they see a 767 coming to land where they're about to race. And they're like, what the?
That looks like it's coming towards us. Holy crap, that is coming. Coming towards us.
Yeah, exactly. Strange, huh? Anyway, have a good one.
Yeah, man. You too. Take care.
Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop a 5-star review in your favorite podcast app. It helps people find out about our show and grow our audience, and we'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or MP3 and provide us a link so we can play it on the show. You can also subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, the Google Play Store, Spotify, or your podcatcher of choice. And finally, sign up for our mailing list by heading over to microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll get notices of each episode as well as the show notes sent to you directly each week. We'll be back with a new episode next week. Thanks for listening.